friends, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Happy Friday. It's upon us. The tape is rolling. Dr. Audio, of course, scowling at me because there is no tape. We are a fully digital operation. So, okay, all right. Something along those lines. Welcome. I'm glad we're all here again today. What is it? 14th of June, middle of June. The year is almost half over. The 14th of June also means it's Flag Day, which is odd. I woke up this morning. I actually had a dream about a flag. In my dream, there was some sort of flag, and it was dusty, and I felt bad that the flag was dusty, and I wanted to properly unfurl it. I don't know where it came from. Whatever. I woke up, turned the TV on, and heard that it was Flag Day. That is odd. I'll say that. But the other bit of news today, it is President Trump's birthday. So happy birthday, Mr. President. Did you catch this speech down in San Ysidro? That is the San Diego, the greater San Diego area, for those of you not in the know. Did you you hear that this senior, the valedictorian, Natalie Buer, just roasted pretty much everyone in her school's administration? So, you know, it's graduation season now, given the time of year. And so we have a number of absolutely boring, insipid speeches supposedly being given by the brightest and best among us, the treasures, the gifts of our future. Well, Miss Buer upended the tradition of giving long, boring speeches about nothing and went completely off script. Have a listen.
To my counselor, thanks for teaching me to fend for myself. You were always unavailable to my parents and I, despite appointments. And might I note, you expressed to me your joy in knowing that one of your students was valedictorian when you had absolutely no role in my achievements. To the staff in the main office, thank you for teaching me how to be resourceful. Your negligence to inform me of several scholarships until the day before they were due potentially caused me to miss out on thousands of dollars. When applying for a work permit, you repeatedly turned me away, despite confirming with my employer and parents that all my paperwork was filled correctly. To the teacher who was regularly intoxicated during class this year, thank you for using yourself as an example to teach students about the dangers of alcoholism. Being escorted by police out of school left a lasting impression. I hope that future students and staff learn from these examples.
Fantastic. All right. I know it was a touch long, but here's what she says. She says that her counselor, right, her academic counselor at school, I think most of us have had one. Some people are lucky and they get a good one. She did not, and this lady apparently didn't, or I don't know if it was a lady. But anyway, this person didn't necessarily pop up until it was time to claim credit for the achievements of this young student. And then it goes on to say that, you know, she's trying to work. So what we have here, we have an oddity, folks. We've got a young, not millennial. What is this? What would this be? Gen Z. Is that a rapper name? Gen Z student. We got a young person who wants to work in high school. And the school can't even get their stuff together and file her permit properly. Anyway. Then there's an alcoholic teacher. Did you hear the crowd go wild? It's a known secret. It's everybody knows in the whole school. Now, my takeaway, I heard this, and immediately the thought that popped into my mind, well, this is classic. All we ever hear in California, and I would say even just generally in America, we hear what? The narrative. We need more money for schools, more money for students. It's a funding issue. We're letting our kids down. When the real story, and nobody dares say this here, and in the story, nobody dares touch this beyond, well, we have a brave young lady who is addressing some issues. The real story is that this school district and this school specifically is run poorly. She mentions by name before this part that I played for you. She mentions by name a number of teachers who were incredible positive experiences in her life. She mentions also by name her parents and how much she looks up to them. Like, this was not just a trash talking speech. But the point is, this is a school and a district that cannot get rid of bad teachers. It takes literally a teacher being let off in handcuffs to address a problem. And this, friends, is what happens when we turn over precious things like education to the state. I know you think it's an over... No, but bear with me here, because one of the great political debates or things this week going on is Bernie Sanders talking about healthcare as a right. California, we're, you know, healthcare, we're giving it away to illegals now. That's something new that I guess now is officially done. We've been doing it for years, of course, but now it's the law. And all of this, right, the idea of turning over healthcare, for example, and having it, because first things first is paying for it. Then down the road, what the slippery slope leads to, of course, is single payer, and then the state controls it. So instead of talking about that in the abstract, talking about what healthcare looks like in a concept where it is now run by the government, let's just look at things that are already run by the government. In what universe do you have? Clearly, this district is able to attract good teachers. She mentions them. That's not the problem. The district cannot get rid of bad teachers. And that does not exist in the private sector. I mean, sure, of course, we all work with an idiot or two, right, at the office. But private enterprise is far better at ridding itself of cancer, of problems, of laziness, of drug use. And all of this, of course, matters when. It matters when push comes to shove and you've got a young, impressionable kid, right? I have three. I have three of my kids in public school. And I tell you, it absolutely terrifies me. And even in our excellent public school, there are teachers there who are incompetent. And you cannot really do much about it. It's tough. And you can't do much about it, of course, because when you are a state actor, a government actor, there are far greater rules and prohibitions on all sorts of things that involve, you know, making somebody lose basically their state benefit, which is their job. Firing people from state functions is very difficult. And yet that is the essential ingredient to making any enterprise work, whether it's a school, whether it's a hospital, whether it's the frickin' DMV. A colleague of mine this week, you're going to love this story. A colleague of mine this week calls the DMV. She has a problem with her registration to a car this is a little complicated. It was like a non-operation car, and she's got to do some type of a renewal. She misses her renewal window. She's speaking to the lady on the phone at the DMV, and the lady finally says to her, "Look, ma'am, I know this is our fault. I know this is our problem, and here are your two options. You can come in to the office and, you know, and maybe the person at the window will be able to take care of it, or as an alternative, may I ask, are you a member of AAA?" And you literally have a state employee referring my colleague, my friend, to the AAA, a private company who is fulfilling state functions, on contract. And we're all familiar. We all know what the AAA clubs do. So, I mean, this is, you know, and we do this with education. A lot of parents who are frustrated with public schooling do what? They send their kids to private school, of course, subject to their means. And what ultimately this democratic socialist, whatever you want to call it, universe that the left has created in this state and in fact all over the country does is it depresses the quality of every service it touches, even education. And those that are most affected by it are those most unable to elect to leave it, the poor. It is the poor. It's the ones the left professes to care the most about that become the most affected by this. And it really, if you are truly a socially minded person and believe in justice for all and equality, what the left has done in this country and what it is in this campaign for president, right, in 2020, the ideas that are being floated and proposed these are things that would literally make the poorest among us suffer in greater misery than ever before. Now, I will say this gal, Natalie Buer, in San Ysidro, she was interviewed by CBS 8 in San Diego. And of course, the mainstream media stooges, the local henchmen of the state media, said, you know, hey, well, you know, Miss Buer, I mean, you think maybe you went a little bit too far. I mean, there's some people are struggling, you know, this teacher, you know, she's whoever it was you were talking about. Alcoholism is a disease. And Buer's response, the student's response was great. I love this. I don't know where this young lady came from, but got kudos to her parents for teaching her right. And listen to this, friends, because this is exactly right. She says, and I quote, I understand that those I criticize may be facing personal issues, but I don't think that should be affecting their commitments or the school's responsibility to fulfill their commitments. What? Is this what we call personal responsibility? Well, it's the cornerstone of any job, of any relationship. And we, by the way, I think this is a huge fetish of the left to indulge us, to allow ourselves as society to indulge these thoughts of, well, look, I can't help it. I can't. Well, wait, what do you mean? What do you think? Well, the welfare state is. I can't work. And something that really ought to provide benefits to the absolutely needy few become a giant overwrought bureaucracy of subsidies to millions and millions of people. That's what this is. I mean, it's a school districts and a lot of I'm a product of public schools. I went was at Irvine Unified School District. Was there from the first to the 12th grade. I saw it firsthand, and I had teachers who had no business teaching. They would be absolute losers in the real world. They were lazy. They were awful. They were all liberals. Can tell you that part of it for sure. You couldn't fire him. You can't do anything. And perhaps one of my more incompetent teachers is now assistant superintendent. Yeah, I'm on one right now. I tell you. Yeah, no, that's really what happens. The most incompetent teachers in the classroom are the ones that move up And because they are better at all the jargon and all the, you know, all the catchphrases and the political correctness and the networking, you're useless. The stuff that matters here and is being in the classroom, working hard, being smart, motivating the kids. Yeah, I know. All right, so let's bring this back to what's going on in 2020. When I come back, I'll give you the update on the race, what's going on. You almost get the feeling, right, that this election is going to be this November by how hot it's getting. I'll tell you what that means. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is a solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Yes, speaking of tenure track positions, Bernie Sanders, this hot off the presses, is still the senator from Vermont. And he's still a viable candidate. He is still a viable candidate, and he is still a die-in-the-wool communist. Now, I'll tell you, he's not shying away from this, folks. He's in it, all in, Democratic Socialist. And I love this on Anderson Cooper, him talking about, and Cooper, by the way, is very simpatico to what Bernie is saying, and is helping him along with this, as you will hear. And Bernie starts talking about how America, it always starts with this. America is a really, really crappy place. Listen.
In most countries around the world, the level of income and wealth inequality, which in the United States today is worse than at any time since the 1920s, with three families owning more wealth than the bottom half of America.
He knows. He was there.
That level of income and wealth inequality is much less severe than it is right here in the United States.
But the taxes in many of those countries are much higher than they are, the individual personal taxes much higher than they are in the United States.
Yeah, but I suspect that a lot of people in this country would be delighted to pay more in taxes if they had health, if they had comprehensive health care as a human right.
Sir, you are a moron. Also, by the way, a very astute, capable con artist Bernie Sanders has become a multimillionaire from various government loans that he's gotten and different deals he's done. There's the private college his wife has swindled. I mean, this is classic. He suspects, right, that people would be willing to pay a lot more in taxes if they were guaranteed health care. You know, can I tell you what this is like? And I don't want to, by the way, we've got a guest in the studio who is a dear friend of the show. Matt Weiss is here today observing. And I don't want to put anyone down when I say this. But to me, this idea of universal health care, right, health care that is paid for entirely by the state. So all you do is pay a lot more money in taxes, and you're cool with that. You like that because Bernie says you would. But you pay more money in taxes, and then the health care that you get is free. Do you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of my absolute worst nightmare, which would be an all-inclusive vacation. You know the kind of resorts that people are dying at in the Dominican Republic? That's it, right there. So what you do is you pay one fee, and then guess what? The alcohol is free. The food is free. Everything's free. It's all included. I do a fair amount of traveling. I got three kids. I've done it all sorts of ways. I can tell you right now, the food generally sucks when you're in an all-inclusive environment. And why is that? It's simple. There is no motive to improve the individual line item quality, be it a drink like a cocktail, a hamburger at lunch, a nice meal at dinner. There is no motivation for the resort to make anything more special, better quality, or whatnot, when they get paid the flat amount regardless. And, you know, people, I get it. Especially with the group, and it's great, by the way, for family reunion trips. You know, everybody's got a different budget. It's ideal. But I want choice. You know, it's the liberals that want choice. What they mean is murdering babies. I mean, that's the kind of choice. When you're a liberal, that's what choice is. But for me, it's choice at the buffet line. And I also want to be able to decide where I'm going to get an MRI and when I'm going to get an MRI. I'll tell you what we're going to do. I'm just throwing this out there. If Bernie Sanders gets elected, or someone of his ilk becomes president, takes this country over and decides to turn us into Cuba, I'm opening a pet hospital. I'm inviting all of you to my pet hospital. If you get cancer, it's my pet hospital that you'll want to get treated at. Trust me, it's not going to be Bernie Sanders Memorial. All right, Sam Rojasky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rojasky, Sam Nation, making radio great again. We are, the campaign right now, the Democratic primary is hot. It's red hot. Biden is still significantly ahead in the polls, although producer Robbie has just informed me that the betting averages, the index of wagers placed on the race, which I think in many ways is nicely accurate because you're not just going to a company that's asking a few registered people who may or may not even end up voting what they think, but this is people putting actual money down. Has Biden at 29%. Warren, can you believe this? Warren is second at 14%. Buttigieg, the boy wonder from Indiana, at 13.5, just half a percentage above Sanders, who in the polls, right, is the clear runner-up after Biden. We suspect that this high showing for Warren in the betting averages might have to do with her tribe's participation in a casino or two. Sam Nation will investigate. Yes, that going to come back to haunt us? What does that rhyme with? Okay. All right. Speaking of the campaign trail, speaking of the state of health care, speaking of all of this, Joe Biden on the campaign trail in Iowa on Wednesday sounded about half dead himself. Listen to him, and then he talks about curing cancer. This is pretty touching.
You know, a lot of you understand that what loss is, and when loss occurs, you know that, you know, people come up to you and tell you, I understand if you lose a husband, a wife, a son, a daughter, a family member. And lots of times you feel like saying, you know, they say, I know how you feel. And if they hadn't, you look at them, you know they mean well, but you say, you have no idea how I feel. But when it happens to you, you know. That's why I've worked so hard in my career to make sure that I promise you, if I'm elected president, you're going to see the single most important thing that changes in America is we're going to cure cancer.
Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness. Again, if it were If curing cancer were as easy as the government snapping its fingers and filing an executive order. Oh, I know. Trump doesn't want to cure cancer. That's by implication, right? I mean, I couldn't even sit here and tell you Obama didn't want it. What do you think? Obama didn't want to cure cancer? When Biden was literally vice president for 8 years. Depending between him and Eric Holder was the number one, number two bro of the president. Was a senator from Delaware since, I think, maybe the Triassic era. And you're telling me that in all of that time, I mean, really all it would have taken was just that little bit more push and we would have cured cancer. I think the thing that is offensive to me, just where I get a visceral reaction to this, is, of course, the lie here is obvious. I'm sad to say, but there's really not much that a president can do. I know you're going to say, well, there's more funding. Well, yeah, it's going to have to come from Congress, you idiot. All right. So that's out. I guess he can lend it his moral support. But the bigger part of all of this is, do you have any idea what will happen to our research, our development, the evolution of pharmaceuticals, if all of this is brought into and put under the control of a state-run federal single-payer system? It's devastating. And every time you and this guy, by the way, this goes for Trump, too. I hate when he gets after pharmaceuticals companies and talks about getting down drug prices and this. And you have to understand something. The best stuff we have, the biggest lifesavers come from greedy, profit oriented, evil corporations. I'm telling you right now, if there's a company out there that could come up with a pill that you take and it would cure an, you know, cancer X or cancer Y, it'd be out there because anybody who's facing death would pay anything for that pill. Look at Pharma Bro, Mr. Shrekley, whatever her name is, was Wu-Tang Clan man. That guy bought, you know, a drug, a life-saving HIV drug, and shot the price up 1,000, 2,000%, whatever it was. And people paid it still. Because when people want to live, they will pay the money. I can assure you of one thing. I give you this as a solemn Sam Nation oath. That the path to a cancer cure is faster in a capitalistic system than in the kind of, I don't know, drug-induced fantasy land Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, all these clowns imagine this country ought to be. All right? How? Sam Rzhovsky, back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation. On a somewhat more serious note, a general reaction right now to how the Democratic primary is going. I want everybody to realize that what happens right now really doesn't matter. Okay, it really doesn't matter because the election is not this fall. It's next fall. Okay, the primary season will kick into gear here soon. We're going to have the first debate where they've cut only three of the 9,000 people running for the Democratic Party nomination. And so you're going to have a stage full of Democrats. What a nightmare. Can you imagine the odor in that room? Just kidding. They're going to have, I think, 20 people on stage. Do you remember what this was like when Trump, well, you know, in 2016, really what I'm talking about is 2015, You remember what it was like in 2015 when there were almost 20 Republicans up on the stage? And what happens? We're still the same people in the audience, right? It's you and I. We still have a limited attention span. So it's not like this thing's going to go for 10 hours. It's still an hour and a half deal. So if you know math, which you may not know if you went to public school, but if you know math, you know there's people are speaking for 30 seconds, a minute. So who shines? In 2015, Trump shined because he's a master of the 30-second soundbite. The guy is just gold. He has a natural talent and ability to cut through and to capture the cameras with his wit, good, bad, or the ugly. You know, it's just all, it works. So the question I have for you is, because I'm asking myself the same thing, who in this field of Democratic potential candidates, potential winners, right? Who here has the strength to do that? And it's not about convincing the people in the room, right? It's a televised event. Who's going to be looking at? How are we going to be parsing through it? And which one of these guys is the cream that rises to the top? I don't know. Just because Biden's the front runner, all that does right now is guarantee him all the arrows. He's getting, you know, you saw Beto started putting a shiv in old Joe this week, saying he might be too old. He's been not on the right side of a number of progressive issues over the years, including abortion and civil rights. Biden, of course, has been plagued now with, and we talked about this last week, all sorts of plagiarism things, but also that he's insisted that he participated in the civil rights movement when he more than likely never marched with anyone, all this stuff, right? But this is all stuff that he's being attacked with by fellow Democrats. So my opinion here, right, my thought on all of this is, it's way too soon to know who's gonna fare well. That, of course, does not stop me from speculating. So here goes. Biden's weakening. This is my view, but he's weakening. He is not necessarily being very adept at deflecting and fighting back on the various shots that are fired at him. And I think it's because he's tired. I don't think he has it in him. I think Biden 4 years ago would have been able to do it. He had a little vice presidential bounce in his step. He was flying around on Air Force Two. He had all the Secret Service protection and lifestyle and everything. And it was, now I understand he had some personal family tragedy and by all accounts, too, weird stuff happening in the Biden family. Well, the son died and then the widow hooks up with the other son. I don't know about your family. Mine, I think that would be looked at a little bit with some thoughts. But anyway, I get all that. But he had vigor. He's going to, if he becomes the candidate, remember who he's going to have to go up against. I mean, Trump is a fire-breathing dragon. He wakes up at, 3:30 in the morning, cracks 5 cans of Diet Coke, and hits the ground running. He wipes the floor with men who are half his age. He tires out aides in his administration who are in their 20s. Trump's the Energizer Bunny. Remember how sickly, tired, and out of it Hillary was? I'm getting that vibe from old Joe. Buttigieg? Well, Buttigieg he's slick. I've told you this. He's got a great mastery of delivering good lines. He's eloquent, sharp, fresh-faced, has a really hot husband. I wouldn't know, but producer Robbie told me that, so I'm going to go along with it. No, I don't want to get in your log cabin. It's all a joke, folks. All a joke. No, but he's young. He just has a, he looks boyish. And I don't know, Buttigieg in 10 years. Okay, I got it. But he's boyish. You know what? Buttigieg needs a run. He needs to be governor for a couple, you know, couple terms, and he'll come out of that. Buttigieg in his 50s? Oh, my God. Lethal. But Buttigieg v. Trump? I don't see it. So who do I think is going to win the Democratic primary? I'll tell you right now. You're going to be, now you're going to be the smartest guy in the room because you're going to know. The guy that is, and it's a guy, first clue, that wins the Democratic primary is Trump. Trump's going to win the Democratic primary. He's the one who's going to win this. It doesn't matter who the nominee is at this point. I don't see anybody here who's a Trump killer. The X factor in all of this, of course, is the economy, and the economy. So there we have it. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. My angels of Anaheim, of Los Angeles, or whatever the hell they're called now, have just secured some great victories against the Dodgers. Now, I know a great number of you are LA Dodgers fans, and I'm excluding you specifically from what I'm about to say. But I went to a couple games, you know, I have season tickets, and I'm holding court at Angel Stadium, watching my beloved Angels do what they were doing. And these Dodger fans, oh my God, I'm telling you right, I've completely revised my thoughts on baseball fans. I always ranked New York Yankees fans as most obnoxious. I know Boston, yeah, I got it, but at here when they're visiting, Angels, Yankee fans were always the worst. Nope. Dodgers fans now take and they get grumpy when they're losing. So with that said, I'll tell you the only thing that really makes me grumpy at games. And that is when they honor a serviceman. You know, at Angel Stadium, at least, they always honor a veteran or someone who is currently serving in the armed forces. And that man or woman stands up, and what do? Everybody stands up, and we remove our hats, and we clap, and we cheer, because that's what we do. And I, the other day, there's these two guys in front of me that wouldn't stand. Not only would they wouldn't stand, they were obnoxious about it, too. Not saying if they were Dodgers fans or not, but they were. And I got to tell you, this here is the reason after the economy, besides the economy as a key issue for the 2020 race, there is a cultural element here. There is a X factor in our culture war where Trump also has a leading advantage. I want to get into this because it's talked about every week, whether the left wants it or not. And yet it's not being nearly acknowledged enough as the advantage that Trump has going into this race. So don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say, this was their finest hour.
Hi, Sam Rejofsky here. You know, speaking of culture, I had an experience at the office the other day where I'm talking to some of my coworkers, and I realized I absolutely have no idea about what the music scene is doing today in 2019. It comes down to current events. So there was some rapper in LA that I had never heard of, and his name I found out is Lil Xan, is how you pronounce it. It's LilXan. And if you didn't hear about this, Lil Xan is he's tiny. I think he's like a little Polly Pocket, like 5'6". And he's got the requisite face tattoos. That's how you know he's legit. And he's getting out of a G-Wagon, which he thinks he's so tough. And hey, Lil Xan, that's my wife's car. Okay. That's what Mrs. Sam Nation drives. So don't, you know, he's getting out of his G-Wagon, and some guy gets on his case about, and some comments he made about another rapper that's dead. I don't even care. Anyway, Lil Xan pulls out a gun. And it's on video. That's, you know, that's assault with a deadly weapon. You don't actually have to fire a weapon shoot it or whatnot for it to be assault. It's the apprehension also of harm, right? The threat, and it's if you've got an immediate use to it, all of this stuff. There's a serious crimes unit at LAPD that are looking into it. He's facing jail time potentially for that. So this is just to setting up why we were having the conversation. And I started looking at all these rapper names, and there's a lot of littles in rap. My favorite one was Lil Uzi Vert. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Lil Uzi Vert, do you even know who he is? He made almost 20 million last year. Man, I'm in the wrong business. Swizz Beatz, number 20, at 15 million, tie with Russ. But I guess Russ is a pretty normal name. Chance the Rapper, Migos, DJ Khaled. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it. But we're trying to figure out what producer Robbie's rap name would be. And do you know there's a website online that's a rap name generator? So it will take you through. It's like a, no, this is very, bear with me because it's funny. There's a rap name generator. And so we put certain information into it with producer Robbie's help. And one of the things it asks you is who's your favorite criminal? So it was my suggestion we put in Ted Bundy. What else did it ask? Your favorite, like, mood or drink? Oh, drink, we put down mezcal. We put in something about Robbie being into cowboys. What about music? Do you remember the music? Oh, cowboy was the music. Got it. So here are some of the results from the rap name generator online for our very own producer, Rob. Robtastic RH. Oh, wait, we forgot to tell people your favorite TV show character was Magnum P.I. Magnum Moo. Cowboy Face Rob. I love the Rob Normus H. And also, since we all know how high maintenance you are, Robbie, the Rob Adonna, I think, was a strong contender. Inspector Cowboy was pretty good. Rabba H, that was good. And Bundy Monday. Mezcal Bundy, too. I think that was a good one. So if you want a good laugh this weekend with your kids, well, maybe not your kids, but with someone that you love, yeah, go to this. You can Google it. You find it pretty easily. The Democrats do not want to get near the culture war with Trump. How's that for a segue? Is that pretty good? Pretty smooth? All right, amateurs, take note. This is how we do things. But you know why they don't want to? Do you know I read this great article? Who put this thing out? The McClatchy's Washington Bureau. Let's see. It's I don't know who wrote this piece. Where's my header and phone? I don't know who wrote this. But the title of this from a couple years ago, a year and a half ago, was that Democrats are desperate to avoid a culture war with Trump. And this piece is still so accurate. I had this in my stack of stuff, and it's been coming up again because, well, we've talked about it, the abortion issue, right? This is not, right, this is not a fight that Democrats want to have going into 2020. Democrats want to talk about what? The thing, what are they talking about? They want to talk about the economy. They want to talk about taxes. Well, I know the irony is both are strong suits for Trump, but in the Democrats' warped brains, they're not. We have record unemployment. Record low unemployment. But the Democrats have convinced themselves that there are more people being left behind in this economy than income inequality than since the 1920s. And by the way, let me answer that because I think it's foundational for the next point I'm going to make. Income inequality is kind of like saying climate change, right? It's a squishy term. And, you know, I don't really care about income inequality. I care about me. Okay? I don't care about what the richest guy in America is doing. You know why? Because I don't believe in envy. I'm worried about what I'm making. What money is coming into my pocket? Do I have a job? Is it the job I want? Is it the career I want? Am I headed in the right direction? Is my business profitable and doing well? That's what matters to me. So if the rich have become 10 times richer and I in this economy have become only twice as well off as I was, or have my income's only gone up 30% in this economy, I don't really give an F, do I? Because I'm doing well in this economy. It's the class-baiting, class-hating, democratic, socialist, communist pinkos that want to con us, want to rile us up and get us into thinking about not how we are doing, how you and I are doing, but get us all fired up to grab our pitchforks to go after these billionaires, trillionaires, whoever they are, and make them the issue. The problem with this fight is that ultimately people aren't that fired up if they've got food on the table or if they're doing better today than they did 2, 3, 4 years ago. The Obama economy was a disaster. The Obama economy left people dollar for dollar worse off than they were under George W. Bush. It's just math, like raw dollars. They ended up with less money, take home pay at the end of the day by virtue of wages getting squeezed, unemployment being high, right? A lot of unemployed people out there has a way of depressing wages. Basic economic fact that you learn if you go to a decent college. And all of this, right, changed or has begun to change for many people quantifiably under Trump. And this matters because while the Democrats want to talk about the economy, I think the voters really don't care about it nearly as much. They like the idea of free health care, like the idea of it. But by and large, if things are going well for them, there is no visceral response. But the emotional and visceral response comes to culture war issues. Now, let me tell you what I mean. I'm bringing this back now to where we ended last segment. There are people right now, that are so upset with Trump that they are crapping. I almost said the real word. They are crapping all over this country. Today is Flag Day. So, you know, it's the day where we pull our flags out. We get, you know, we get excited about being Americans. It's a patriotic day. In fact, I think, Dr. Audio, did you put this on my desk here? I have a dachshund, a stuffed dachshund here, who's dressed as Uncle Sam. Very patriotic. I'll give you two thumbs up for this. But I, you know, they can call Trump an American. They can call him a Putin lover. They can do all of this. But it's the left that's out there refusing to stand for the anthem, refusing these LA fans at the ballgame, refusing to stand for some guy that's putting his life on the line for a country. You know, he's not a political guy. He doesn't care about, it's not a Trump yay or nay thing. He's just with our military, things that used to be apolitical. Republicans, Democrats, left, right, got up and stood up for the anthem, got up and stood up for men and women who served in the military. We got up and stood up and gave respect to this country. And respect for this country has become a politicized issue. And it is such a bad look. And every time, well, speaking of a great Dodgers fan, Vince Scully, remember back in, what, a year ago, 2 years ago, he said, I'm not a political guy. I'm not even particularly that patriotic. I served in the Navy for a year, you know, big deal. But these anthem protests, refusing to stand for the anthem, I'm never going to another NFL game. That was Vince Scully. See, it's not a political issue to most people, but most people, the people that are offended by this lack of patriotism, by this vitriolic hatred toward Trump that then gets in the way of people giving respect to this country. This is off-putting to a number of people who are absolutely dead quiet about it. You saw the polls this past week where Biden, theoretically, if the election were held today, it would be a landslide for Biden if it was Biden v. Trump. And these polls are designed to demoralize us. They are designed to make us quake in our boots and shake and go, oh, dear me. Oh, my God. It's lost. It's inevitable. Biden's been anointed. These polls, friends, these polls, I promise you, are not picking up the silent many of us that do not, that are put off by the left, not on the issues, but on America and the culture war that is being fought here. And it starts with patriotism. That's the number. I'm telling you, it's foundational. A lot of people think of the culture war as, you know, transgender bathrooms. But it's both. Patriotism is most universal. But I'm telling you right now, there's a lot of middle-of-the-road Democrats that don't think it's okay for a transsexual male, right? A guy who's transitioning from male to female to be going into bathrooms with little girls at the old community center. Now, people are not okay with that. Viscerally. Now, you can call the parent that objects to that a bigot and a homophobe, whatever, transphobic. It's hard to keep up with all the phobias that we allegedly possess. But it's outside of San Francisco proper. It's hard to find a majority of people that go, oh, but that's, of course that's okay. And it's on these, Trump's willingness to be politically incorrect is really his ability, it's foundational to his ability to be able to connect with people and to bring out sympathies and allegiances from people that are not being picked up on the political radar in these polls and elsewhere. So this is really the big, this is the big, and this is an area where the Democrats, by virtue of wanting to oppose every freak minority group, are falling over themselves to be inclusive, end up excluding rational, thinking, normal, middle Americans. And I look at this map of Biden just running roughshod over the Midwest and taking all these Trump voters away from Trump, and I just don't see it. I don't see it. And I'll tell you, and it is the political correctness issue is one of them. But some of these other crazy things that the Democrats are supporting, it's just every time that Trump draws them into a confrontation, when Georgia and Missouri passed these onerous restrictions on abortion, thereby drawing all the Democrats into this fight about abortion. You think it's going to hurt the, I don't think it hurts Trump in the end. I think it'll hurt the, it reminds everybody of an issue that was settled and done and was law and was over. And it just reminded everybody about the barbaric practice that abortion is, and brought the issue up, unnecessarily reignited an issue. And it's a net benefit to whoever's running on the Republican side. All right, Sam Rogowski, more after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Mayor, you know, he's the guy on HBO, has an HBO program. He's a leftist, but he's a guy who understands, is a big opponent of political correctness and all of this, these restrictions on speech and whatnot. He said something really interesting on CNN's Cuomo Primetime with Chris Cuomo this on Tuesday. Listen closely.
I think a lot of this far left political correctness is a cancer on progressivism. I think when you talk to Trump supporters, they are not blind to his myriad flaws. But one thing they always say is he's not politically correct. I don't think you can overestimate how much people have been choking on political correctness and hate it.
This is the Democrats' kryptonite, of course. And it's twofold. One, they want to set the rules about what we can and cannot talk about. That is what political correctness is. It is imposed censorship. Every Republican in my lifetime has wilted like a little flower on a hot day when the Democrat comes along and says, that's insensitive. How dare you say this? Whatever. And Trump just doesn't give a crap. Trump just goes in and says it. And he doesn't always do it perfectly. But he wins people over because of his honesty. And I think this is true, too, for the interview that everyone is talking about, where Trump with George Stephanopoulos in the Oval Office said he would take, potentially would take that call from a foreign country offering dirt on an opponent. And you know, everybody went bananas and crazy. My comment about that is, again, it's part of his frankness and his honesty. I mean, any politician, what's the political response? Any politician would, of course, say, oh, I would never. And the rest of us in Realville, we're all looking at each other and going, really? How am I? What? No, of course you would take that call. Of course you would take a peek. Yeah, you might turn it over to the FBI afterwards, but you're going to look first. I mean, I have turned in many, many wallets in my day. I have found and turned in wallets. It's what I do. It's just my MO, right? You lose a wallet. If there's a way to trace you, I'm going to get it back to you. Every time I've looked inside to see how much cash there is, I just do it because I'm curious, right? I wish I could tell you it's to find the ID, but no, I'm going to look at how much cash there is. Because obviously, the more cash there is, the better I feel about myself for turning it in. But this is absurd. Right, I'll take a break. We'll play the clip. I want you to hear the clip because I want you to form an opinion for yourself and not just take my word for it. It's been totally mischaracterized what Trump said. But to my greater point on being candid and fighting political correctness, it's all part of a culture war that the Democrats cannot win in 2020. They cannot win it because America as a whole is not yet aligned with their radical thinking on social issues. And two, this lack of political correctness from the president and his willingness to tackle the things that we're all thinking but don't want to say leads people to believe him to be a genuine person. And as it is in real life, so it is in politics. We are more willing to accept a genuinely flawed person than a flawed fake or a perfect fake, right? Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Hello, hello! Is this the FBI? Donald Trump here. Oh, my gosh. Somebody just gave me some opposition research. Look, here is the interview with Trump and George Stephanopoulos. This is where Stephanopoulos basically says, look, would you, you know, in reference to that Trump Tower meeting where a Russian lawyer had suggested to the campaign that she had some stuff on Hillary and they took the meeting. Turned out she had nothing. It was basically bait to get Trump in there to talk about other issues, and they kicked her out. So here, Stephanopoulos, basically, it's an effort. And by you know who Stephanopoulos is, right? He's a Clinton family stooge, worked in the Clinton White House. He probably would have a great rapper name that would start with Lil, okay? Because this guy is also a little Polly Pocket. So Stephanopoulos is not a Trump lover, okay? Working for ABC News, and here he is trying to get the president.
Your campaign this time around, if foreigners, if Russia, if China, if someone else offers you information on an opponent, should they accept it or should they call the FBI?
I think maybe you do both. I think you might want to listen. There's nothing wrong with listening. If somebody called from a country... Norway, we have information on your opponent. Oh, I think I'd want to hear it.
You want that kind of interference in our elections?
It's not an interference. They have information. I think I'd take it. If I thought there was something wrong, I'd go maybe to the FBI if I thought there was something wrong. But when somebody comes up with oppo research, right, they come up with oppo research. Oh, let's call the FBI. The FBI doesn't have enough agents to take care of it. But you go and talk honestly to congressmen. They all do it. They always have.
Yeah. And he goes on. That's the way it is. It's called oppo research. Right. So that and now this is what everybody's talking about. The Trump. This is new foundation for Trump. Being eligible, I guess, for impeachment. I always look at this as a lawyer because I put that hat on from time to time. And Stephanopoulos asks, so if foreigners give you information, offer you information, should you accept it? Or should you call the FBI? And he says, I think maybe you do both. Now, and whatever he says after that is irrelevant. I want to understand how Stephanopoulos, having worked for Bill and Hillary Clinton, who took literally north of $1 billion from foreign governments while she was Secretary of State. And she was what? The heir, the anointed heir to the presidency of one Barack Obama. How he can, with a straight face, make a big stink about this. Now, as a lawyer, I look at this, and I'm telling you, this doesn't violate any laws. Now, instead of getting into the codes and all that, let me give you an illustrative example. And nobody's presented it this way, this is an original thought to this program. Trump is the president of the United States, correct? So let's look at this logically here for a minute. The CIA, for example, what does it do on a daily basis? It collects dirt, and most of the time, by the way, paid for information from foreign governments and foreign operatives all day long. Okay, now I don't care for what purpose, that's fill in the blank, but that's what we communicate with foreign governments all day long. The CIA, the way it's set up, is an extension of the executive branch. Can you imagine if there was a de facto prohibition in the code that prohibited the executive branch from talking to foreign governments and obtaining information? The answer is no. Hell no. If you get the information and there's something stinky, you call the FBI. And that's what Trump said. There's nothing here. This is just nothing but crap. And not only did the Clintons take north of $1 billion from governments that, by the way, many of them are hugely antagonistic to Russia, specifically the Uranium One deal. That was a state-sponsored deal where money literally from the Russian Federation ended up going through a bank, through a company, and straight into the pockets of the Clinton family foundation, right? And so take that aside. Hillary Clinton in 2016 paid a foreign operative who paid money to Russia's FSB. So literally Clinton's money went from her to her lawyer, from her lawyer to Christopher Steele, from Christopher Steele, well, Fusion GPS was somewhere in there, Fusion GPS to Christopher Steele, Christopher Steele to Russia's version of the FBI. And that's where the Golden Showers dossier came down from. And guess what happened? None other than John St. McCain flies a private government airplane to pick up said copy of the report, obtains it, disseminates it throughout a community of his colleagues and friends. Only after he has humiliated Trump with it, then turns it over to the FBI. But we are led to believe that McCain is just the most pristine, perfect guy, and it's Trump that's the scoundrel. Let me tell you, I cannot wait for all of this to come out. I cannot wait for the opportunity that the 2020 campaign comes, that brings. I cannot wait for Biden or whoever it is that wins, that draws the short straw to lose to Trump in November. Will be magnificent to watch Trump with all of these facts wipe the floor with these people, because they are in this so deep. The Clintons, Obama, all of their people, all of this is a shrill protestation in an effort to deflect from all of their past sins. It is what it is. Sam Rogowski back in just moments.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
I'm sorry, for the next story, I need different music. Do you have something a little more funereal? There we go. I don't know how to begin telling you folks about what just happened here, but this from the New York Post just 4 days ago. The tree Macron gave to Trump to symbolize their eternal friendship has died. The oak sapling French President Emmanuel Macron presented to President Trump last year to symbolize 100 years of friendship between the two nations died while in quarantine. They put it was an immigrant tree. That was it. They INS put it in a detention center. No, they had it on the White House lawn, but I guess it still had to be quarantined for whatever reason. So it's dead now. And I think this is right. This is where Trump is definitely going to lose the Green Party voters since he's putting trees in cages. Will be their rallying cry. Okay. Speaking of rallying cries, the impeach Trump cry. I have to disagree. Bill Bennett this morning on Fox and Friends was saying that he thinks that the congressional Democrats were going to go for it. I just do not see it. In all deference and respect to Secretary Bennett, I can tell you why, because I think even committed leftists who understand Washington are beginning to see through this crap that the Democrats are pulling and see how much of this is just pure window dressing without being any substantive action. Here is Chris Matthews just roasting Eric Swalwell. Swalwell's one of the congressional Democrats who's running for president. If you haven't heard about him or don't know who he is, don't feel bad, because most of us have not. So here is on Hardball, Chris Matthews grilling Eric Swalwell about the impeachment charade.
Congressman, I've watched the Democrats dither around with process. Adam Schiff talking about what he's going to do, what he's not going to do. Then he's disappeared. You guys never get anything done. You've not been able to get a single witness up there that didn't want to come up. Name me the witness you've gotten to come before your committee. In all these months, you've had subpoena power. Who are you going to get to testify that's important in this race that are going to turn this issue around so you can move on impeachment? Who's going to come up?
Empty witness chairs will now mean empty pockets. So they can either go broke or they can come forward and tell the truth. That's what today's contempt vote
means. Do you think bringing back John Dean served any purpose yesterday?
Yes, of course. I think laying the foundation of what this means in the perspective of history, Chris, I think it's important not to just assume that everyone has seen and is familiar with Watergate, and so lay that out for them so they understand what's at stake.
Did you know he was going to testify? He was not a fact witness. He had no facts to offer to this debate about the guilt or innocence of the president.
No, I didn't know that.
Well, that's pretty dramatic stuff. It sort of takes him off the table as just sort of a, guilt by nostalgia. It became, I thought, ridiculous.
No, they're turning on each other. I love it. So he's referring to the turncoat lawyer who basically, and James Dean, who offered to basically was the catalyst for taking down President Nixon. And so Dean, who's a lying sack of crap, comes to the congressional testimony hearing, right? And all he's doing is being asked questions about Watergate. Hey, Democrats, that ship has sailed. It's gone. He doesn't have anything. He's not been involved in the investigation of Trump. He doesn't have any intel. He's not a member of the law enforcement community. He's no bearing on this whatsoever. So Chris Matthews takes him to the shed, and Swalwell's defending himself. No, we're winning. We're winning. We're winning. He sounds like Mr. Bean in Rat Race. It's a race. We're winning. We're winning. Or Mr. Bean's character, regardless of Rowan Atkinson. Anyway. Swalwell, too, I will point out, should be somewhat of an expert in empty pockets, because he's mean empty chairs mean empty pockets. They're fining people for not showing up. So they're basically bankrupting people to get them to go to their kangaroo court. You know, Swalwell's campaign is so desperate, they started taking Bitcoin. But by the way, isn't that kind of shady? I mean, I'm running for president, and yes, you may contribute to my candidacy with currency that is difficult to trace. He also was the first Democratic candidate to do a well-publicized drive for $1 donations. So Swalwell is the dollar movie candidate for president, talking about the empty pockets of those coming before him. It was all important committee. This is what it has devolved into, right? It's a joke. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, I will end with a controversial thought, because as it seems to have happened here, California is on the leading edge of crazy, and our state legislature has moved a few steps closer to allowing felons to serve on juries. Now, the OC Register, in which I read about this, the writer of the article is apoplectic about this. And it says, the writer writes here that felons currently are prevented from serving on juries because of their obvious and inherent bias against prosecutors and law enforcement. Now, I actually don't think that this is the worst idea. Well, if that's the argument, right? If the argument is that you can't be on a jury because you've been to jail, you've been arrested, you've been perhaps mistreated or not by the police, how is that different from allowing a sworn law enforcement officer to serve on a jury? I'm going to tell you, from my experience, before you jump all over me and get mad at me and call me a turncoat, or worse, from my experience, there's plenty of good cops and some bad ones. And you're supposed to have a jury of your peers, right? So if you're a guy that's been in jail, been arrested, is facing charges, I mean, somebody who's been through that process, has done his time, has been released and reintegrated as a member of society, should that person be allowed to serve on a jury? I don't think the answer is necessarily no. I think no is a knee-jerk reaction. So I need to think this. I need to think more about this, and I'm going to read this bill. This just came across my desk today. It came out literally yesterday. Late in the day, John Phillips wrote this piece. And I see why. I know him. He has a strong opinion about this. But I don't necessarily think it's the worst. I mean, imagine how it would go down. You got a jury, 12 people. And there's been some claims of falsified evidence. I understand why law enforcement, I understand why district attorneys would not want a released felon to come up and have their opinion be heard amongst those 12 people. But I don't necessarily think that that opinion is unworthy. And friends, just so we be clear, there are plenty of idiots on juries. If you think that letting felons on juries is going to change any outcomes necessarily, you are gravely mistaken. Here in Orange County, the DAs call them avocados. I told you this. They call jurors avocados. And that's pejorative. All they mean is you could put potatoes, avocados. They're just inanimate objects. You just put them in the jury box, and they don't. The complicated thinking, that's out. Nuanced arguments, forget about it. You're talking to an avocado. I like avocado, but I guess I'm more in my guacamole than on my jury. Anyway, food for thought. It's been a great program. Enjoy your Flag Day. If you see President Trump, wish him a happy birthday from me. Sam Murjofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.